Scotty, it's good to see you. I feel very bad that I don't have Khalil. It's terrible. It's beyond comprehension. I have more students over the world than anyone. And a prophet is without honor on his own home, plain and simple. Say that we have what to do. All right, I'm ready to roll. I hope... you drop them off. The thing is, there's no direct bus to the old city, but if you can
go to the 38, or you can go to the Tapper Shona on the parking lot, and you get a free bus.
Yeah, square up
after. The parking lot. Okay, good. Okay. All right, let's begin. We have a world to do today. First of all, I just want to say, I received you what you said about Rabbi Rachman. I'll answer you on Monday. I don't want to miss it in with today. Zelichut v'zelichut. Today is February 2nd already, 2020, and I say hello to the students in front of me and those around the world. Some comments on earlier points that we've made in class. I just want to refer you to an article by Joe Wolowowski. Joe Wolowowski is a wonderful individual. He is associated with Flatbush Yeshiva and disappeared in Chakira in 2014, and he deals with women saying Kaddish. So we're on very firm territory, particularly in the Litvisha world. He quotes here people who he knew learning in Mir, who spoke about the earlier generation when his cousin died, leaving an adult daughter with no sons. Rav Chaim Moshe Gruzinsky had allowed her to say Kaddish daily in the minyan. Another Talmud in Mir said that, recalled that the Chafetz Chaim had similarly ruled. Professor Yaffa Eliach, when she was researching her book, There Once Was a World, Tzipora Chutna Kravitz, this is evidently the daughter of the Rav of the her book on There Once Was a World, the city of Eisashuk, and she was the wife of Rabbi Yosef Kravitz. I wonder if that isn't the Rabbi Kravitz who taught at RJJ. Rosh Yeshiva RJJ, recalled that in 1935, when she was 14 years old, her brothers were out of town when her father, Rabbi Naftali Menachem Chutna, the dean of the town, died. She said Kaddish at the graveside and continued to say Kaddish in both the towns, Beit Medrash and Shtibel, until her brother returned. Rabbi Yosef Eliyahu Henkin recalled that in his youth, young woman said Kaddish, and he saw no problem as long as she, he said, as long as it's in the women's section, did not see a problem. In the early 1970s, I'll tell you why in a second. In the early 1970s, when the issue came up, a chapter of Yavna, you remember Yavna, the National Religious Jewish Students Association, asked Rabbi Gerard Blitzstein, then a faculty advisor to Yavna, about the issue. And he wrote back to Wolowowski, who asked him, I spoke to Baron Lichtenstein, and the Baron asked the Rav, and the Rav answered in the affirmative. I then asked, the Rav's only question was, is the girl in the Esras Nashim? Yes. So no problem whatsoever. He also asked Rabbi Ezra Bick, one of the leading Yavna student leaders, and you know who Rabbi Ezra Bick is, Rosh Yeshiva in Har Etzion today. And Rabbi Ezra Bick told him, he spoke to the Rav about it, this is what I quoted, and the Rav told Rabbi Ezra Bick, I remember being in Vilna at the Goyim's Klois, which was in one of your modern Orthodox shuls, and a woman came into the back, and she said Kaddish after Mariv. I asked the Rav whether it would make a difference if someone was saying Kaddish along with her or not, and he replied that he could see no objection in either case. It's perfectly all right. And then Rabbi Ezra Bickford from his own family, that's Rabbi Moshe Bick, Rabbi Shol Bick, my wife's family's poskim. And my posek as a kid in the Bronx, that there was Eidat Nemana, that women said Kaddish in Mezbitz, in the Beis Medrash. So if anyone wants the article, it's yours. But we're on very strong ground. Why are people hesitant? Why is there opposition? I come back to what I said last Monday. The slopery slip. I love it. The slippery slope, the slopery slip. I think what I'm saying is better. And thank you for correcting me. Although today I'm saying it on purpose. We're living at a time where people are worried, you know, if we're mater this, who knows what will be asked to be mater tomorrow, Steve. So, halacha l'maisa, we can graciously tell a woman she can say Kaddish and we can answer the Kaddish, and it's very important because if a woman is saying Kaddish, it means a great deal to her. And here, there's no need to create barriers. Halachically, we have Rav Moshe on our side, we have the Rav on our side, we have one after another, Rav Chaim Moshe Grzynski, Eidat Ne'emar, the Chafetz Chaim, we're in good ground. Coming back to...
What if they can't hear her? She's in the women's section.
Tell her to come forward to the front of the women's section. See, Rav Henkin says today it's not a problem.
Yeah.
Originally, when only one person said the Kaddish, like you see in Monk Shul in London, or tomorrow Charlie Hexter will say Eidot, where he grew up in Washington Heights in Rabbi Breuer's Shul, you have the person saying Kaddish stands up front. That wouldn't be proper. To have a woman go all the way up front, that's not proper. But you see, in Europe, they did come into the back of the Beis Medrash. I still remember where I grew up in the Bronx, occasionally a woman came into the back of the Beis Medrash. I don't have to say Kaddish or to answer Amen or to give tzedakah. No one said boo. So you would ask her to step forward, but it's important. I'm not in favor of her coming in there. The mechitza problem, it's also the slippery slope. But anyway, let it stand. We're on solid ground. I also want to correct myself. I keep on saying the sons of a Rav. It should be the sons of Rav. S-A-N-Z-E-R. Regarding Rav Moshe Feinstein, and not using time clocks. So David Newman, who's related by marriage to Vic Snow, sent me an email from Cleveland. He has a big electrical business. He's an electrician. His son is in it with him. And to his knowledge, Reb Moshe did permit time clocks for lights, but not for dealing with the stove, the plata. Everyone in Israel has a plata. I don't know how to say it in English, a hot plate. And it works on a time clock. And for solid food, you know, it's a whole machlokes ha'poskim, but I guess with solid food you can be matir. The question is, can you put it on when it's on or put it on before? It's better probably to put it on before. I know it's a machlokes ha'poskim. Look into Shmirat Shabbat Kehilchata. But that Reb Moshe was not matir, but for electric lights, yes. And David Newman added a point that Bizman Hazer, we shouldn't use time clocks altogether. All we have to do is install LED lighting. And the LED, am I pronouncing it right? LED lighting is cheaper than all the electric clocks. It costs you more to run the time clock than it costs for the LED. That's according to an electrician, a mumcha. All right, the other problem that hangs fire, and really it's an interesting problem. I asked Morty Tarrigan to ask Rav Asher Weiss, Effie, the question, but I now heard the recording of the shiur. I saw a video of the shiur, and I heard it once, and I heard it twice, and Morty heard it, and I thank also my Talmud, David Tweski. We all heard it. And there's no two ways. Reb Asher Weiss said, Chama Medina is a concept of one drink that everyone drinks chashivot. Well, if that's the case, it knocks out all the Rishonim Achronim that I understand. You see, the Orach HaShulchan talks in terms of tea and milk, right or wrong. Reb Moshe talks in terms of tea and milk. And Reb Moshe, his whole definition If it's a drink that you weren't turned down, even if you're not thirsty. And that, again, is the question I raised. The question hangs fire. The Lubavitch water. If you're a Lubavitcher and someone orders you a drink, water from Lubavitch with Allah Hechsherim, Rebbeinu Shel Olam, won't you drink it? I'm not saying you, a Lubavitcher. You're not thirsty, but a Lubavitcher, a Lubavitcher, for him it's Chama Medina. I'm waiting to hear a Chabad Pasuk. Okay, let's roll. We have a very fascinating material today. So, as I said to you, Josh, we're using Reb Menashe Klein, his tshuva, what he deals with, are very fascinating. I don't think anyone else in the world would have dealt with the shaila, if your shtreimel is blown under the car, how do you take it out from under the car on Shabbos? But Reb Menashe Klein deals with it seriously, and he makes a chilek between a car and between a truck, something that's much higher up. And one of the rabbonim who advised the guy, crawl under the car and put your shtreimel on under the car. I don't understand that. How can he crawl under the car? The car, it doesn't allow it. If it's more than 3 tfachim, there's no shaila. Just lift it out because there's no reshut hayoked. You follow? But if it's less than 3 tfachim, how do you get your head under the car to put on a shtreimel? All right, Elliot, we'll leave that for Reb Menashe Klein to deal with. But the computer question already is something that affects everyone in this class. Elliot, are you in computers? Well, no, you're not. But the Josh is in computers. The computer question affects everyone. And this is a questionnaire from 1977. And you see at that time already that people were using computers, but not individual computers. No individual ever dreamt he would own a computer. You'll see this plays a role in what he's going to Paskin, but people, firms, businesses, governments, the computer, as I told you, what I saw in 1980, 3 years later, was the first time I saw a computer. Steve said it's in a movie too. It was a whole wall with lights flashing, bashing, sounds, clicks, schmicks. Wow. And are you allowed to program, to send something in before Shabbat? And to send something, to program something before Shabbat that will continue on Shabbat. So we saw last week that number one, there's no din of Shvita Kedem, although you should know the Ramban Paskins, they're in Shvita Kedem. It's not so simple that the halacha is Lakula. But basically speaking, we Paskin Lakula. And if that's the case, even if your utensils are doing work on Shabbat, the utensils are working, not you. It's not like your son, your daughter, your Eved, your Shivcha. This is a utensil. All right. So from that point of view, there shouldn't be a problem. But then, what about the noise? And the noise question, I have to tell you, this sugya that we ended off the class with last week has many, many implications. The Gemara in Shabbos Daf Yud Chet Amid Aleph, Ein Al Snin Not Nin Chitim L'Toch Erechem Shamayim Ele My timer mipnei mashmot kol. And that's where we ended off the class leak. And what does this mean? And the Gemara is not clear at all. Rashi says, "Avshva milsa b'Shabbos v'yichaziv gluta," that making noise on Shabbat is an affront to the sanctity of Shabbat. I quoted to you the Art Scroll on this very Gemara, a footnote. It is a public display of dishonor to the Shabbat. That's the way Art Scroll translates Rashi. Some explain that the loud noise itself is a dishonor to the Shabbat. Others maintain that the dishonor lies in the fact that people hearing the noise of the mill will suspect that the owner is adding wheat to the mill on Shabbat. Well, that gets us into the whole question and the whole case. Where do you draw the line? And if you're going to go further, remember the question already that the Achronim raised, the clocks on Shabbos. We forgot about the cuckoo clocks. How do you have a cuckoo clock? People will suspect. People will think you're doing something. People suspect you're working.
Why do we have such a negative attitude about people?
Yitzchak, you don't have a negative attitude about people? The masses aren't a bunch, pardon me, of jackasses? Come on. Look what's going on in Israel. We're going into our third election. We can't have a government. 2,000 people were demonstrating last night against the Trump peace plan. You're worried that the people have brains? People, Baruch Shalom. Ask any liberal in the United States. Confidence in the people? Trump is president? Wow, this guy will start cuss words that you never heard in your life. He'll take from every language in the world and maledict Trump. Netanyahu's opposition? People, smart, wisdom. If they learn Torah, let's hope they'll be smart. Okay. Anyway, but Marisayan, all right, where do we draw the line? So you saw right away that the Ramam self-paskins, you're allowed to set a clock. Everyone knows that the clock works that way. Every hour, every half hour, the cuckoo comes out, the bird comes out, the clock makes a sound, the church bells are ringing. Kachidaka shel chayim. You take it further, and that's the open halacha of the Ramah. You take it further in the world which we live today, that time clocks are so widely accepted. Everyone will know that it's not something you're doing. You're not turning on lights. You're not turning off lights. Where do you draw the line with noise? That's a very interesting question. It could very well be that these kids who want to watch a game on Shabbos and they program the TV and they have a time clock, could very well be you have to tell the kid that that's not Shabbos stick, the roar of the crowd, the baseball. But where do you draw the line? What about in shul, 1,000 people are davening, there's noise, there's talking. I've seen already in shuls, the rabbi finishes speaking, they applaud. Are you allowed to applaud in Shabbos? All these are sensitive questions. But I think the bottom line has to be a little common sense. With that, I agree with Yitzchak. And where do we draw the line? And I'll tell you a story, b'didenu havi'uvta. I was one scholar in residence in North Miami Beach. In North Miami Beach, there's a wonderful rabbi, Rabbi Shapiro. Rabbi Shapiro is a third generation American rabbi. His grandfather, I think his first name is Ephraim. Thank you, Vic. A wonderful rabbi. He's a Lakewood graduate. His grandfather was one of the early Reitz graduates out of the 20s. I believe his father may have been a Reitz graduate. These are three generation of rabbis. And he's walking to shul. I was there that Shabbat. And he saw kids playing baseball. From the shul, kids playing baseball. He came to the shul and he got up and he was hysterical. And my heart went out to him. And I understand his feelings. It's really vachadik playing baseball, running, hitting, batting, schmatting. I don't know, maybe basketball is a little bit easier to see on Shabbos because all you do is throw the ball. But baseball, and he gave these kids musa. And there was a whole debate among the balabatim. And they asked me my opinion. I said, look, I didn't come here. A gas spike nishtaf tish. I'm a guest. The guest doesn't come to spit on the table to cause problems. But I said, I would have never yelled and screamed at the kids that way. It's sort of a turnoff, I would say. It's like the kids hear that, you know, Ma'ika Hadin, they didn't do any Issa. It's not involved. It's not like kids texting on Shabbos where they may be involved with Yisurim the Oraita, at least the Suffolk Issa the Oraita. But right, this is only baseball. But I felt so bad for the rabbi, and I understood why he was upset. But where do you draw the line? This is a very nebulous question, and you have to use common sense. If I'm a Rav in Yerushalayim and kids are playing baseball, I think I would tell them that this is not Shabbos stick. If I'm a Rav in Maplewood, New Jersey, and some frum kids are playing baseball on Shabbos, I think I would tell them, well, I hope one day you'll grow up and you'll understand that it's more constructive on Shabbos to learn Torah, to study Torah, to have an oneg Shabbos. But, all right, I'm not going to rebuke you or reprimand you. I understand you're youngsters and you're enjoying a game of baseball. You follow it? There has to be a certain balance here. Now, let me go one step further. And here, Yitzchak, I'm going to come back to the Monday class, and you're going to think in a minute the Rebbe lost his sense of connection. What is he bringing up here? Just relax. Savlanot. When all is said and done, with all these halachot, and I gave you the sources last week in the Shulchan Aruch, you can give things to a God on Wednesday, Thursday. The old question of mailing a letter before Shabbos, thank God for 51 years I live in Israel, now we don't mail letters altogether. But Scotty never was a shiler on Shabbos because people don't collect mail here. The post office shuts down. You fellas don't even realize when I came in Aliyah, there was no frumer place than the post office. Can anyone tell me what I'm saying? The Sahadoa, it was in the hands of Poli Agudat Yisrael, Minsk. You can check it out. And all the Gera Hasidim who couldn't be medical doctors, lawyers, accountants, they don't have that training, you follow me? Effie, they worked in the Doha. I once went in, the main Doha. Please relax, we know that. But let's enjoy. I once went into the Doha, it doesn't exist anymore, Rehov Yafo, and I met someone I knew with him. They said, come, I'll show you behind the scenes. My word of honor, he takes me behind the scenes. And it's like they're singing a niggin, da-da-da-da-da-da, singing a niggin, passing the mail, sorting it out into the very, there were boxes set up, not exactly a box, but a netting where Rechavya neighborhood, Talbiya neighborhood, Katamon neighborhood, they were throwing the letters that had to be delivered. And I tell you, they were passing one to another with a good Gera niggin. So I said, now I understand why it takes 10 days from a letter to go. But I said, if they're enjoying it so, mit a geschmack a niggin, a Michael. But when you give it to a guy, you have to mail it with enough time before Shabbos that he could pick it up and do what he wants. Right, there are many heterim. There are heterim even right before Shabbos because he's not working for you, he's working for the government, etc. But one thing is brought down in the halacha, you'll see in the Magen Avraham, that when a guy is working, is doing it, you gave him work to do. You gave him work on Wednesday, Thursdays. No shyly, he can do whatever he wants. You didn't tell him to do it on Shabbos. He's fixing your car. He could have fixed it Wednesday, could have fixed it Thursday. All right. But he was busy. Shabbos, he has time. He's working on your car. So the halacha is that you can't stand near him. Why can't you stand near him? It's all the same concept, that people will think you told them to work for you on Shabbos. Amira la'akam. You follow? So there has to be a certain sense here. Noise, lights going on and off. All right, a great deal we can be makil today. And a great deal you have to use common sense. But one thing is for certain, if the guy is working for you and you worked it out long before Shabbos, there's no halachic problem, it's b'hav la'ah, you're paying him for the general work, not for Shabbos, but to stand near him, you are not allowed. Now, I want to shift gears altogether. Shvat is here. Tu B'Shvat is around the corner, a little over a week away. Tu B'Shvat, Purim can't be far behind. The minute you talk about Purim, Pesach is breathing down our backs. If you open up any of the freebies they get in shul, I pick up on Friday about 15 different freebies. I can someday review the difference between each one. It's fascinating. But the ads, it seems to me we've reached a stage in life that no one is home for Pesach. No one will know how to make Pesach anymore. I don't know. I've turned down all invitations. I don't go anywhere. Thank God my wife and I have the ability. We eat with our daughter, with the Seder, with the Yontif, the children, the grandchildren, the great-grandchildren. But the whole world, all right, Pesach is coming. All right, now let's talk about Shmura Matzah. Tell me, what makes something chametz? You mix one of the five grains together with water for 18 minutes. It is absolutely chametz, right or wrong? So look into Hilchat Pesach. I'm now quoting from the Shulchan Aruch, quoting from the Mishnah Brewer. I'm giving you the final product of all from the Gemara on, from the Torah, I should say, Shematem et hamatzat, et hamitzvah, hamatzat. Look in Hilchat Pesach, Simin Tav Nun Gimel, Sif Katan Dalet, Hachitim shall sim bechem matzat mitzvah, tov lishomran, shelo yiplu aleihem mayim mishat ketzira, ulefachot mishat tchina, ubishat hadachak muta likach kemach min hashuk. Look into the Mishnah Brura. What is this talking about? Matzah Shmura. The matzah that we eat, Leil HaSeder, there has to be Shmira L'Shem Matzat Mitzvah. The whole process of making Matzah Mitzvah, there has to be a Kavana. And when does that Kavana begin? So the first choice is Mishat Ketzira. Why Mishat Ketzira? Because from that point on, if you can, you should start to watch that water does not fall on the grain. Kolzman, the grain is standing in the field. You have nothing to worry about because it doesn't become chametz. It's kachi tivish shel olam. That grain has to grow. There has to be soil. There has to be water. There has to be oxygen, nutrients, all that goes into it. All right, that doesn't make chametz. But the minute you harvest it and water falls on it and remains 18 minutes, could very well be it becomes chametz. All right, generally speaking, we don't worry about it because most people, farmers, industry, when you harvest the grain, you want to protect it from water. It's not good for the grain to have water on it because it starts to sprout, to grow. You want to process it afterwards. But lachatchila, we are shomer flour we're going to use for matzat mitzvah from the shat ketzira. B'di'evet, if you can't do it mishat ketzira, we do it mishat tchina. Tchina means when the process begins. You start grinding it. Then already you're going to expose it to water. You got to be careful. B'shat ha'dachak, you can actually buy flour that's ground already, min hashuk. And we go with the assumption that there was no re'uta, there's a chazaka, that people are careful. You want to keep the grain free of water until you process it, until you bake it. We go with the chazaka, perhaps it is okay, but the eved, you can use it. All right? All of you know that all the matzah shmura made today is mishat ketzira. And actually, if you recall, in the last war we fought, 5 years ago already, the war in Gaza. So, you know what I'm talking about? That they came up with these tunnels, and one tunnel, when they came out of it, was terrible. They killed 3-4 soldiers, one of them, a young man who I had just stopped with that Friday night, Shaw from our neighborhood, the Shaw boy, Lo Aleinu. God have mercy. Another tunnel, they came out of the tunnel, they were blown away immediately. Steve, do you remember why? The other tunnel ended in a field of wheat. That field of wheat, they already had harvested for Shmura Matzah. And when they came out of the tunnel, nothing covered them. They weren't hidden. They were blown away on the spot. They couldn't do any damage. So you see, this is a big process, begins early. And that's the wheat that's used for Shmura Matzah. All right, I will come back to the Shmura Matzah in a minute, give you the source, what am I talking about, tie it together. But I want to say something that no one will talk about in public. And this is one of the most delicate problems Talmidei Chachamim faced in the 20th century. Yitzchak, you were one of my shluchim to Russia. You look back on life today, it was Ruby Davidman told me this in the last few months of his life. The greatest thing he ever did was he went to Russia, I sent him. It was a unique experience, what we saw today. You take Yomo, I don't know where he is today. I hope he's feeling well. Yomo doesn't even know what communism is about. You understand? It's a new generation. From the time communism actually fell, more or less, it's 30 years already. 30 years. When we were in Russia 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, we met Russian kids. B'nai Torah. They want to go to North Vietnam. I said, what do you want to go to North Vietnam? We want to see what communism is like.
North Korea.
Thank you. Thank you. North Korea. Malk and I told him, idiot, go to Cuba. Don't go to North Korea. He says, but I have a Russian passport. That. Who knows your Russian passport today, North Korea? God have mercy. They don't know what communism is about. Now, communism? You don't know what went on. Every year, the Jews, their religion was over. Yom Kippur was over. Rosh Hashanah was over. Shavuos was over. Pesach they couldn't eradicate. And we have so many stories. I can give you a real live story from the person who headed up Shamir, Shomri Mitzvah Yotzei Russia, Bezalel Schiff, I think his name is. He wrote where he was. He came from a part, one of the republics that was further away from the heart of Russia, but communist control, communist. And this big communist officer calls him in for an interview, and he's shaking in the office. No one is allowed into the office, just him. He figured, and the communist guy knew he's religious. And it's I write about this person in Washington. You can read the story there. Not this story. I have another story about him that's also fabulous. So this lady, this big communist, what power, life and death in her hands. She closes all the doors of her office and she says, I need a favor from you. Get me 2 kilo of matzah. Wrap it that no one will know what it is and bring it to this office. That's what she wanted. Could you imagine? And there's story after story after story like this. They couldn't eradicate. So the government, with Western pressure, the joint used to get involved, the ambassador of the United States, Great Britain, France, the Scandinavian countries. Everyone would get involved and the great Russian Empire would make flour available for them to bake matzah. And if you open up Washington by my good friend Aaron Rakefet, you'll see one of the pictures, the baking of matzah in the downstairs, the cellar of the Leningrad synagogue. And that picture, it's been picked up. Other people have picked it up, asked my permission, have published it. It's, I don't know why, but it's like a fascinating picture. Tell me, was that flour good to bake matzah? Forget about matzah shmura. My dear students, you don't realize that communism was very poor. It was a Potemkin's village. Sputnik. There was nothing there. The poverty. Even until today, there are parts of Russia where you think you're back in Anatevka. So the Russian government and rightfully so, worried about the health of their population. You know, you got to remember, Russia has a very big problem. China has a very big problem. Assuming they survive the plague, they're not enough people. The birth rate is way beneath the death rate, way beneath, because they turned the woman into an Amazon. Everyone works. Why have children? Why put up with children? Look what your parents put into you to raise you. And look what you, Josh, what you're putting into your children, how much your children cost you. School, college, university, camp, whatnot. Don't even ask. Who needs children? One kid, a mother feels fulfilled, the rest she's working. All right. These real problems. People are poor. People don't have proper nourishment. You live in the free world. What you can eat, what you can drink, what you can buy. Do you know the story out of the 70s? A Russian general doing negotiations with Syria after the Yom Kippur War. So he comes to Tiberias. So the Israelis, the liaisons, after they finish their business, said, come, we'll take you shopping. And they take him to a food store in Tiberias. We're not talking now, it's the 70s. It's not Yerushalayim, it's not Haifa, not Tel Aviv, Tiberias, the 70s. And it's a co-op. And the general, the Russian general asks, who is allowed to shop here? Offices, Politburo? He couldn't believe that anyone could come in and buy what they had. And this is the 70s. So what they did, they used to wash the flour, the wheat, and add vitamins to it. That flour, when it reached the hands of the bakeries for bread or for matzah, was 100% chametz. You follow me, Yitzchak? Washed, boiled, vitamins added. Do you say anything? Do you open your mouth? Do you say a word? No rabbi, no Talmud Chacham said a word. Tov shiyu shogegin? Not only that, at least they knew Pesach was different. The few people who really were lamdanim, they went out of their way to harvest their own wheat, bake their own matzah from A to Z at risk of life. There's stories. You read about the Chabadnikim. The Chabadnikim, you know how many Chabadnikim were executed? You have any idea? Or died in exile or executed. We don't have to go further than the seventh Rebbe's father. It's beyond words. But now, why'd I tell you all this? What does it have to do with a guy doing work, the noise? Watch. You hire these goyim. We need wheat. Jews weren't farmers in the diaspora, in the Gola. Today in Israel, we're farmers. It's a different story. You hire goyim. We need wheat. They're harvesting. You got to be sure that from the minute they harvest, no water drops on it. Mashgichim are sent to fields as early as right now already. Hanukkah time, they started working for Pesach. Yomo, what you missed, you were mentioned, you were missed. We're in Russia now. Come in. Are you wearing your Lenin medals? Yes or no? I'm sneaking in without the medals. Gentlemen, the Mashkiach, you hired these goyim. They work around the clock. They're busy harvesting. They're working on Shabbos. Elliot Rosner is a kid. He wants to pick up a little extra money. My nephew is a shtickle of Mashkiach. It pays well. You're out in the field on Shabbos. 100% against the halacha. What did we just say? You hire goyim to do work for you, fine, good, but keep away from them. We can't start rumors, we can't start marasayan. And here you are, you're out in the field and on Shabbos, and you have to watch them. How is that allowed? And this is halacha psuka, that you are absolutely allowed. L'shem matzvat mitzvah. And look into the Mishnah Brura, Siman Tav Nun Gimel. Look into the Mishnah Brura, Sif Chatan Chaf Dalet. And on Shabbos, the Achronim Amatir, you hire them. It goes back to the Be'er Heitev, Sif Chatan Tet. And let me quote to you. Kagong samuch lePesach, Rashay haYisrael lishmahar eichayim, shelo yitchameitz. And they're grinding it. They're harvesting. They're grinding. They're doing all this. You hire them. You need 10 tons of wheat. That is Shmur Mishat Ktsira, Shmur Mishat Techina. You have to be on top of it. And here, the Be'er Heitev, and everyone quotes him, Halacha Lamaisa, you are allowed to be with him on Shabbos. How do you explain this? And here we come to the Monday class. Here we come to Blue Greenberg being quoted by Rabbi Rachman and being quoted by my dear friend of a lifetime, Rabbi Yitzchak Rubin. If there's a rabbinic will, there is a halachic way. Yitzchak is saying, what's going on here? Rabbis, on Shabbos, there's Eli being a mashgiach, making a little side money. There is Effie making a little side money. What's going on here? There is Scotty. Jews hire Gentiles. Yes, this is a good example, a rabbinic well, a halachic way. What's wrong? Take it to Agunit, solve all problems. Gentlemen, and this is what I explained to Yitzchak. There's a big difference between Torah law and rabbinic law. Safek de'oraita l'chumra. When you go near a Torah law, you are shaking, you are shivering. Lahatir and Aguna, Rabbanim fasted on the day, this is Minag Yisrael, you can look into the Otsar Poskim, the day they had to be Matir and Aguna, they fasted that they shouldn't be making a mistake. So Dindi Oraita, Eshetish, Mamzerim, what are you dealing with? All the rabbinic will in the world, which has resulted in over 1 million pages of responsa literature, can't create a halachic way. When there's a halachic wall, there's a wall. Rabbinic law, very flexible. The rabbis themselves, b'makom tzar, lo gazru rabbanan. B'machem tircha lo gazru rabbanan. You have to have matzah. What are you dealing with here? A shvut to shvut. It's not even, you can't even say it's a black and white rabbinic law. It's just a fence around the fence that you're not allowed to ask a guy to do work, which is a halacha. So they put a fence. You shouldn't stay next to him on Shabbos because of Marisayan. But here, you have no choice. Makom tsar, Makom Tircha, your back is against the wall. So you see this concept, Rechayim, Goyim, Rash, Kavod HaShabbos, tremendous fallout from this concept. But fascinating, at this point, everyone quotes the Be'er Heitev. Mashgichim, if they're working on Shabbos and you have to be there, you have to guarantee we can make matzat mitzvah, you have to be there on Shabbos. Can anyone bring me a proof that I'm 100% right? Who's learning Yoredeya this year? Isaac? You're not learning Yoredeya. Not learning Yoredeya. Who's learning Yoredeya? Yoredeya. Could you believe there's a difference when the Shiloh is asked? Erev Shabbos, Erev Yontif. A difference of who's coming to your table. Archim. A difference whether you're a multi-millionaire or you're just an impoverished little Jew. Right or wrong. All that. Hefsid Meruba. All that figures in the halacha. So an Amoritz will say, Rebbe, don't you see? This is not halacha. This is freedom of choice. It's like a baseball game. You have nine people who are going to go to bat. You choose that one. You choose that one. It's like a catcher signaling the pitcher. Give me a curveball. Give me a fair choice. You dummy. When it's a dindio writer, there's no freedom of choice. All these instances in your Adaya with the Lachat Chilan and B'diyeber and the factors of Shabbos and Erev Yontif and Mishum Archim, etc., Hefsid Meruba, you're dealing with rabbinic law. When you're dealing with rabbinic law, there is much more room to be flexible. Hein Gazru v'Hein Gazru. You understand? It's all part of the same compilation. It's all part of the same structure. And this is the halacha when it comes to Matzah Shmura, guarding, safeguarding. Of course, you got to be there on Shabbos. We're very fortunate that we're in Eretz Yisrael, Medinat Yisrael today. So Baruch Hashem, Jews don't work on Shabbos. And even those who are not that observant, they understand very well to get hashgacha, they have to live with the demands of the rabbinate. Some of the most secular left-wing kibbutzim today, all their produce is under the Eda Haredit. And you know that yourself. You can't find a product in Yerushalayim that doesn't have two hashgachas. The rabbinate required by law, and then it adds on the Eda Haredit, Sheret Yisrael, Kehilah. There's so many different hashgachas today. Wow. But Baruch Hashem, the Shas hashgachas, Rabbi Machpud, wherever you go, dual hashgacha. So we don't have that problem. But in Chutz Laretz, 100%, I know many cases where good Jews had to spend Shabbos in farms before Pesach, break stones, the milk, the cheese, the production. The Goyim are working 7/24. We got to be sure there's no chametz. Before Pesach, I still remember advertisements looking for yeshiva boys who could leave home for Shabbos and help with the hashgacha. Paid well, all right. This is a fabulous fallout from the Rechayim, from the Goy, from the Maris Ayin. And that's the way we paskin lehalacha, the Be'er Heitev. Now, let me just end off this little sideshow. The Kotvav Hachronim, the Achshav, the Haminig, Lechabes, Atachkitim, Ulashoto, Tombamayim, Asur, Likach, Kemich, Chitim, Minchashut, Afilu, Bishat, Hadachak. Okay? Very fascinating. Nowadays, when the wheat is washed, there's a whole manufacturing process. Kemach from the shuk, regular flour, the flour you see sold in the supermarket, absolutely not allowed to utilize that for matzah on Pesach. Absolutely a chash of chametz. Okay.
Is the Mashkiach working on Pesach, or that Shabbos and Pesach, only a din in matzah?
What do you mean a Mashkiach on Pesach? Well, it has to do with the week.
Is this limited to that?
Well, give me another example where there'd be a shayla. With cows milking and all that.
No. A non-Jewish operation that operates on Shabbos.
Yeah,
Mashkiach has to go in.
Depending on what. There's sometimes, the OU and all the big agencies, there's some things that are Yotzei v'Nichnas.
Right, it's Yotzei v'Nichnas. You don't, they're all the time, but he's checking in on Shabbos and Yotzei. I'm telling you, in our town, we have it, because we have a non-Jewish bakery.
There's no shayla. He's there in the community. Yeah, there wouldn't be a shayla.
He's there in the community.
I'll tell you, a problem came up in Israel, very fascinating. The Supreme Court just ruled on it. The problem came up around the corner from where I live. If you go to, it's been written up in the newspapers, if you go Rehov Aza, Pinat Hari, you know where the shul Yatamar is? So there's a big shul at Yatamar. Across the street, literally across the street at the corner, there's a Yemenite restaurant. A real Yemenite restaurant where they're trying to undo what the Ashkenazim did to them 70 years ago. There are pictures in the window and demonstrations. Now it's quieted down. I understand them very well. I mean, there's a terrible thought that Ben-Gurion and company took children away from their parents and sent them out for adoption. Some wound up in America. There are rumors that, I don't want to mention names, it's rumors, but I have a feeling it's true, that some Haredim were involved and kids were sent elsewhere, got good money for it, etc., etc. Terrible, terrible, terrible. All right, this is a crime. And then Yitzchak says the masses have common sense. If the masses had common sense, there wouldn't be one vote for any party that's not right of center. You follow me? Common sense. You have to say to the Mapayim, their inheritors, we have a score to settle with you. But okay, life moves on and people forget. So this restaurant is open Shabbos. Big crowd there. And they say, we are like a hotel. We don't take money on Shabbos. You make your arrangements in advance. And I don't know what they do. If you walk in and you say, look, I didn't make arrangements, so you leave a Tudat Zehut there or something, you leave something of value, and you come back on Sunday, Monday, and pick it up and pay what you owe. They want Hashgacha. And they turn first to Tzohar. Tzohar did not take it on. They're a little bit hesitant. They've done much that the rabbinate will not do, but this instance they were not willing to go that far. So they took the rabbinate to court and went all the way up to the Supreme Court. The rabbinate claimed, and the Supreme Court accepted it, that this is not a hotel. A hotel, any hotel in the country, we can send the mashgiach to. People, I've stayed in hotels, Shabbos, the Mashkiach lives, his family is there, it's fabulous, he has a job, he's there, he comes, he stays, it's fabulous, he has a room, luxury. A restaurant, yes, in Aza, the heart of Yerushalayim, B'tochachei Yerushalayim, we'll find the Mashkiach, Michael. But if we give a Hashkacha here, all over the country, in every little area, another restaurant will say, we're open Shabbos, give hashgacha, we're not taking money, we have a platter, we don't cook. Where are we going to send the mashgiach? Where's he going to stay? How is he going to get there? And they said, we can't start this, because once we start, we can't say, you we give and you don't. You need a mashgiach? Let him sleep in the woods. Let him sleep. Let him hire. Let him find the bed. doesn't work that way. So the Supreme Court ruled with the rabbinate, and they don't have hashgacha. This only raises one problem. Who was in this country in the 50s, into the 60s, into the early 70s? Who knows when?
The restaurants that were open?
One restaurant, on Rehov Histadrut. There was a big restaurant that went back to the Mapai, that was a workers' restaurant, and they were open Shabbos.
What did you get in advance?
You had to make the reservation in advance. You remember one in Yafa, I remember one in Rehov Histadrut. There might have been two.
Later, because I came in 87 first.
And they were still open?
There was something on Yafa where I remember, I forgot the name of the
restaurant. Alright, that could be.
Also paid.
Right. I remember the Histadrut. But alright, I understand the rabbinate today. Also today, they want kashrut all over. See, today, you go to Tel Aviv. I remember Tel Aviv. When Rehov Dizengoff, the only place was what Halperin owned, the Fleishika restaurant, the Milchika restaurant, the wrestler, the guy from B'nai Brak, his father was one of the founders of B'nai Brak, big supporter of the Chazon Ish, and there was nothing kosher. Nothing kosher. You could walk kilometers on Dizengoff, nothing was kosher. Today on Dizengoff, I was there last, I estimated 50%, now I'm told 70% of Dizengoff is kosher. The reason is very simply the French immigration aliyah. The French aliyah, it's 99% traditional, 90% Shomer Shabbos. Kashrut is 99%, they say. And they live in that area, Tel Aviv. Once you're opening a place, you have to be able to sell, to have clientele. And Dizengoff has changed. Now, yes, Michael?
What is the difference between a restaurant that's under good hashgacha and a hotel restaurant? What's the difference?
No, but the question is the hotel, the restaurant isn't the public thoroughfare. When you come up the street to go to shul, you see tens of people sitting outside. And I'll put it this way, it's not Shabbistic. People think it's a restaurant, it's open, they're taking money. It's not like a hotel. A hotel, everyone knows, people in the hotel have to eat. And therefore, outsiders can come in. You have to make it, if you don't make a reservation in advance, no hotel will take you in. Here, it's a little bit different, it's the public thoroughfare. But even if what you say is true, that you could give hashgacha, the rabbinate has a terrible problem. What if a place opens up in some place in Tzur Hadassah, and they want hashgacha on Shabbos, and there's no one living nearby who can be a mashgiach?
You don't get hashgacha.
You can't do that. That's what you can't say that. The rabbinate can't say that. What do you mean we can't get hashgacha?
Suppose there's a hotel there.
The airport is not a problem. There are places there for people to sleep. They can actually come and spend all of Shabbat there. That's not a problem. But so far in the airport, as far as I know, there's nothing open on Shabbos that has hashgacha. There are now places that have hashgacha, but they're not open on Shabbos. As far as I understand, I may be wrong, but there the rabbinate can do something because they can sleep. Anyway, that's the problem. It's not easily soluble. And halvai, we should reach the point where everyone is shomer mitzvah and a place can be open Shabbos and you don't need, you can yotzei v'nichnas, you don't have to worry about him.
Wait a second. McDonald's in the airport is open on Shabbos.
And it's kosher?
And it's kosher. Someone gives the hashgacha.
Who gives the hashgacha?
Someone. And they worked it out with the Gush Etzion, the home of kosher.
And what do they do? And what do they do with money?
They must take it, I don't know.
Take money. All I can say is the airport people can sleep. There are places where people who work at the airport have where to sleep. So that would ameliorate the problem of the Mashiach coming in. But okay, let me go one step further on the fallout of this problem of the computer, the noise, the rush, the automation. And I want to raise one other issue. A dishwasher on Shabbos. No, this issue, and take a hotel, take a kibbutz, and I have to tell you, look into Shmir Shabbat Kachalachata. By the way, all my quotes from Shmir Shabbat Kachalachata are the final edition, the third edition. It's very important because the third edition is much, much bigger than the first or second edition, volume one of Shmirat Shabbat Kehilchata. Shmirat Shabbat Chelek Aleph, I'm quoting page Kuf Samach Bet. Page Kuf Samach Bet, it's Sif Katan Lamed Zayin. It's Perek Yud Bet, Sif Katan Lamed Zayin. And he paskins here, Asur lishtamesh b'shabbat b'medeach kelim. Gam kashechu mufal b'yamsa'ut shon shabbat. Hamachavein mi b'od yom lishtot ha-kelim b'shabbos. U'b'yantef mutal lishtamesh b'medeach kelim. Im amnon hu zakuk le-kelim sheinit bo b'yom. V'hamachona mufelet b'emtzaut sha'on Shabbat. And it's very interesting. He asks using a dishwasher on Shabbos. On Yontif, if you need the dishes later in the day, you're able to use it. On Yontif, there's no problem with water being heated up. Once it's on an automatic clock, it takes away the problem of the noise or whatever the pshat is in the Gemara we quoted an hour ago. Everyone knows today it's automatic, but not on Shabbat. Okay? Shabbat, I want to ask a simple question. What goes on in Kibbutz Hadati? What goes on in a hotel? A hotel, the problem is probably less because they can have non-Jews do it all. What about Kibbutz Hadati? What about Kibbutz Chofetz Chaim? Does anyone know what goes on there? Friday night, and remember, we solved the problem. We can use paper goods. Paper goods today, they're beautiful. What you can get in Israel, you have no idea that when we came in Aliyah, whoever dreamt, BMT, Elliot Rosner's there, 71, whoever dreamt of paper goods? You follow? Nowadays, there isn't a yeshiva in the world that's not using paper goods, and you all know Rakefet told the story about the Rebbetzin. It's written up in the Rav with the Rebbetzin and the Boston Rebbetzin, and she tells the story. I quote the story, Gedolei Israel. But in a what do you call it? In a hotel, you have to serve a nice dishes. How can you use beauty, as beautiful as the paper dishes are, although now they make them that you can't even tell they're not regular dishes. They're more expensive, but they're beautiful. But this is a very interesting question. I don't know what goes on. I'd be curious to hear if someone goes to a kibbutz, a Chafetz Chaim, Shalavim, Tirat Zvi, Shluchat, what do they do with dishes on Shabbat? But halacha lemaisa de shmirat Shabbos kehilchata, without any big pilpul lamata, without any many footnotes, and I'm sure they've explored in tchumim and publications, halacha lemaisa, welcome, welcome, welcome. Halacha lemaisa, Shabbat no, Yontif yes. Yontif in general, the whole problem of boiling water falls away. Everyone knows it's a time clock, but you have to have a need to use them again. In other words, Friday night, you finish, you need the dishes for Shabbos morning. But Yontif, after the Shabbos afternoon meal, I don't think you'd be allowed to use it again if it's Hachana from Yontif to Chol. Where they're goyim involved there, it's a different story. If they're doing it on their own and they run the kitchen and yet you're not authorizing them, it's a different story. I want to show you one other psak here and take us back to the 50s and the Rav. Perek Yud Bet, a minute later, Sif Lamed Chet, Sif Katan Lamed Chet, Mi sheragil kol yemot hashvua litrein et kli asudam luchlachem hayasham min hashulchan lebediach kelim ובו הוא שומר עליהם עד שעת השטיפה בימות החול, מותר לעשות כן גם בשבת ויום טוב. And what's he talking about? And I remember when this came up in the 50s, suddenly a new invention, a dishwasher, and Jews are making a little money, wealthy Jews on Washington Avenue. We never dreamed about dishwashers. But all right, on the Upper West Side, the Upper East Side, dishwashers, Shabbos, Yontif, no, you're cleaning off the table. Where do you put the dishes? When you have a dishwasher, automatically, you put it into the dishwasher. Shabbos Yontif sounds to me like dishwasher is muktzah. Are you allowed to put it into the dishwasher? And I remember the Rav was asked the question. And the Rav paskin lahalacha, that people who have dishwashers, and this is their nohag practice, simple English, nohag in Hebrew, to put from the table into the dishwasher, then this is the purpose of the dishwasher. It's not muktzah. It's not just to wash dishes. It's a place to store the dishes. And the Rav was matir lahalacha. And I remember, Yomo, we were kids. We thought the Rav was so mekel. We thought, wow, this is a psak cooler. And here you take a look in Shmiret Shabbat Gehilchata, so many years later, he paskins so simple that the Rav was 100% correct. And he gives credit here to Tshuvat from Rav Menashe Klein, Tshuvat from Rav Moshe Feinstein, and if we could, he could add on Mori Rebbe, Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, quoted by his devoted student, the youngster Hakatan Aaron Rakefet. But that's with the dishwasher, that's la halacha. About the kibbutzim, let's see if anyone can tell us what's going on. All right. Now back to the question that we're dealing with.
What's the issue of the dishwasher? Heating the water?
Well, you're using electricity. That would be eradicated or eliminated by using a time clock. But the problem is the dishwasher, you're using your boiling water. It's a nisa d'oraita.
And then it's also
hachanel chol is a minor issue, but it's hachanel chol. It's a rabbinic prohibition. But the prohibition is there. The hotels, you see, I think what goes on in the hotels, I once was in Pesach, I did someone a favor, I was a rabbi in a whole program, and turned out the mashgiach was my own student from BMT, the early 70s, Rehov Abarbanel. Amazing how we caught up again with each other. And a nice fellow, had not an easy life, married, I remember, Baruch Hashem, but things were Kamenetsky. If you recall, he was a BMT boy, early 70s. He was the Mashkiach, I think it was the OU, and the Goyim did whatever they wanted. He didn't interfere. He said their job is to keep the kitchen clean, to keep the kitchen running. But there was a problem. They would be cooking from one Yontif to the next, right? 2 days Yontif in America. So the Mashgiach went out of his way to taste something from what they cooked. You follow? That way, that's brought down the halacha that if you cook and you taste, so already it's not hachana from day to day. So that made that aspect of it a little bit more halachically permissible because he tasted. But I saw they did everything. They set up the chairs. They didn't wait till sunset. They're working. They have a job to do. They have to get it ready. So that was the way the psak worked, that they're doing it on their own. This has nothing to do with you. You engage them to run the kitchen, and they run the kitchen as they understand. Okay, so that's halacha lemaisa. But what I'm curious, in the kibbutz hadati, did they differentiate between Shabbat to Yontif? Because the Shmir Shabbat Chag is absolutely right. The boiling of water, it may be automatic, but it's cleaning off those dishes. They're doing it for you. You're going to use them again. Interesting. I'm curious what has happened.
Some device on dishwashers?
What do they have on dishwashers?
It's a random device that starts in the middle of the night. You set it before Shabbos, obviously. And it randomly starts at 3 o'clock in the morning.
What do you mean randomly? How are you using?
It's not a specific time. It's plus or minus 45 minutes.
What does that accomplish?
That's the Tzomet device. I don't know why. You make it random, and you're not setting a specific time. It randomly starts.
And there they are Matir on Shabbos.
That's the Tzomet device.
Interesting. And the boiling water?
Obviously.
Because it's all done by automation. It's done by Kalim. There's no din of clear. Interesting.
So you set it before Shabbos.
Yeah, I understand.
Shabbos mode.
And it randomly cleans, and you can use it the next morning.
Correct.
But what does the randomly accomplish? That it's a grummer of a grummer?
Right.
A grummer of a grummer. You know, it's a specific time. Shvut to shvut. Interesting. I'm sure the kibbutz adati has a system. I was told they work something out. But all right, I'm sure in Tchumim you will find material. But
it's an incredible device that can come up Shabbos morning and get clean dishes.
Yeah, right. No, I understand. I understand. Okay, let me go one step. So right, halacha lemaisa, Reb Menashe Kleinman says this question: can the computer? Okay, halacha lemaisa, he paskins that you can program the computer before Shabbos, even if the computer makes noise, and even if the lights go on and off. We're talking 1977, it was a very primitive computer compared to what we have today. Each one of us in this class walks around with a little gizmo in his hand. But la halacha, he sees no problem. Nira lefi anibidati leka beze shum isa. And on that level, no problem. But then, a siman later, siman nun, perik, we're talking now siman nun, we're talking her chelik yud. And here, 1 minute later, here is the problem. And this is a problem that haunts us on the current Israeli scene. I told you about the electricity. And you'll see... He says, you asked me a second question. You asked me in relation to the computers working on Shabbos, these people working there are Jews. And what happens if a Jew has to intervene on Shabbos? And am I allowed? I leave early. Yeah, understand, this is a wonderful concept. If we are Christian Jews, Protestant Jews, we have no problem. Protestants, Catholics, Muslims, their religion is on an individual basis. What you do is your business, what I do is my business. But that's only half of our commitment. We're Jews as individuals, we're also Jews as part of Klal Yisrael, Am Yisrael, Kahal Yisrael, B'nai Yisrael, the collective cohesive Jewish people, Jewish community. Here, I program it before Shabbos, and it's going to keep on running. It may need intervention. Who's going to intervene? A Jew is going to intervene. The minute a Jew intervenes, one is an Issa D'Oraita, one is an Issa D'Rabbanan. Fellow Jews. Am Yisrael, Arevim, Zeh L'Zeh. This question, Rav Menashe Klein says, is infinitely harder than your original question. And here you translate it, this is what I told you, with the electricity. The Chazon Ish was very machmir. Jews are producing electricity. Nowadays, everything is automatic. We've made progress way beyond the Chazon Ish's era. But nevertheless, the middle of Shabbos, last night, poof, not last night, Friday night, no more heat. Those of us connected to the building seat, once again, Dafgan Shabbos, Rube Goldberg's room, can't turn on the air conditioning. I have other solutions. Something goes wrong, you have to intervene. Now, I can tell you, in Israel, for instance, you have many different overseas carriers, people providing internet connection, phone connection. One of the carriers is 019. There's an 012 and an 013 and an 014, etc. There's an 019. 019, it was written up in the papers. You can go online and get the story. These are farmers from Nachalim. Nachalim is a religious moshav right outside of Petach Tikva. There was a famous yeshiva there. There still may be Nachalim. And these were from people. About 20 years ago, they got involved with high tech and they worked out a computer program for farmers that was fabulous. And once they saw high tech, they went way beyond and left the farming and organized 019. 019 have their own building in the Shomron. I think it's a two-story building, a three-story building. My grandson works for them. He's a very valuable commodity. I'll tell you why in a second. And he may not be so valuable right now. I'll tell you why in a second. In order to get the right to run the phone, the internet, you have to run it 7/24. How do they work it? From Friday afternoon till Motzei Shabbos, no Jew enters the building. Everything is won by Druze. They've solved the problem. When you talk about electricity, there are tremendous security problems. There has to be Jewish hands. God forbid, you're talking about hospitals. You're talking about the army. You're talking about the Mossad. It's all intertwined. You can't just say, we have lines of electricity to Vixus and lines of electricity to Shaarei Tzedek and to where the Mossad or the Shin Bet, the Sheirut Bitachon is working. It's all intertwined. So you can't find an easy solution like 019. What was I talking about? My grandson, he was selected as Worker of the Year. What's so good about it? It's a serious kid. He's further, right? Everything fine, good. But this is a kid who always took English, not important. He speaks only Hebrew to his children. You know, we plead with him. If you give him an extra, nothing helps. But he can't help it. He was raised by his parents who spoke English and his grandparents who spoke English. So he has, as far as speaking, he has an absolute fluent command of understanding and speaking English. Knew where are all the trade shows for 019? China. What a valuable commodity. The big boss, and my daughter always tells me you don't have to worry, but the big boss is frum. So they told the line in China. But my grandson goes along. He not only knows the gizmos, the gadgets, but the English. Elliot, why did I say he might not be so valuable today? My dear Elliot, you can't leave Israel to go to China and you can't come from China into Israel today. V'hamevin yavin. But this Shaila, Reb Menashe Klein says, this is a very difficult one. And he starts asking him questions. You don't make clear what's involved. What do you mean intervention? Do the other people have to intervene? Or it's only if there is an accident, something goes wrong. More than that, what is the intervention? Is it a malacha d'oraita or a malacha d'rabbanan? And you see, this gets involved in a very interesting question. What is a computer? You type in, is that an issa d'oraita or an issa d'rabbanan? What is typing about? Is that the form of writing? Is this kli achiyad? How do you evaluate it? Let me tell you something, Yitzchak. The Rav on Chol HaMoed, whenever he had to write, he typed. Are you aware of that? Because he felt that writing, Chol HaMoed, he went with the Shita, it's an Issa Malacha, it's only Chetayrim. But basically, Chol HaMoed has Kedusha Tayom. Typing is not writing. It's as if to say Kliyachi Yad. It's like doing it with your left hand, not your right hand. The Rav's case, doing it with his right hand, not his left hand. He was a lefty. But very fascinating question. It's like a tape recorder. Can you, when you tape something, is it an Issa Malacha d'Oraita on Shabbos or an Issa Malacha d'Rabbanan? And you got to make clear, explain to me what's involved. Of course, electricity. Then the whole question, how do you rate electricity? Chazon Ish felt it was a suffix Issa d'Oraita. Some felt the Oraita, some felt the Rabbanan. I think the Rav was inclined to the Chazon Ish's point of view. But you see, L'may Nafka Mina, if it's an Issa d'Oraita, this is Mamish Lifnei Evil Lotitei Michshol. How is Lifnei Evil Lotitei Michshol judged? If I have a store and someone can buy tapas from my store, Yayin Nesach, let's say, but wait a minute, I'm not forcing him, I didn't sell it to him. He's Jewish, I go and buy it, not him. Leave out the question, are you allowed to sell Yayin Nesach? It's a different question. But what about if there are 100 other stores? I'm not forcing him to buy from me. Do you know what I'm talking about? The same side of the water. If I'm on the same side and there are 50 other stores, there's no Issa d'Oraita. But if I'm forcing him, he can't get it anywhere else, that's Lifnei Evil Lotitei Michshol. Let's look at this question. I turned the computer on. I set the program on. I brought this all about. I created it. May very well be an Issa d'Oraita. Or no, maybe there's no Issa d'Oraita involved. But it certainly is a rabbinic prohibition, Misayeya Lidei Aveira. Doesn't this take us back to the whole question we raised? Someone stops the car on Shabbos. How do I get to this address? What did the Rav say? Give him the most direct directions to spare Chilul Shabbos. What did the Baron Lichtenstein say? Chas v'chalila, misayeya lidei avera. Take a look here. Even if it's not an Issa d'Oraita, but Misayeya Lidei Aveira, it certainly is. And he asks more questions. Let me end off. He says, who says it's this guy? See, this is what you just said with the patent. What was the word you used? It's random, right? Random. You're not appointing anyone. There are 10 people working there. Anyone can jump in. You're not specifying any individual. And he goes on and on. You're asking a very, very difficult question. Next week, I'll show you what the ultimate answer is, which also is extremely fascinating. So to reiterate, first of all, I just want to tell everyone, I'm going to summarize. Water your mouths for tomorrow's class. Give out the freebies. And then anyone who wants can leave. Jack, don't turn off the machine. I'm going to record a few words. A dear student of mine is leaving his very famous shtela and coming in Aliyah to join his children and grandchildren here. And they're going to make an affair in Teaneck, New Jersey, I guess, to say goodbye. So if anyone wants to stay and hear a few words about our interconnection that goes back about 100 plus years now, that's right after class. The name of the person saying goodbye to Golan Ali. Eli, give me the name. Your Kehila, your greater community. Give the name. Rabbi Stephen Przanski. Correct.
Did they find a place in you?
Excuse me?
Did they find a place in you?
No. First of all, he's not an easy rabbi to replace. He's not the run-of-the-mill. He's different. He's unique. And Beseda,
his father,
Wally. All right, now to reiterate, give me a second. So we dealt at length with the Rechayim making noise. We came down to the question of the Mashkiach on Shabbos. Very fascinating. We went once again back to Blue Greenberg and showed, yes, if there's a rabbinic will, when there's a rabbinic law within the law, you have all the safeguards. But when you're dealing with the Oraita and you hit a stone wall, as the Rav said with Kohen Ligioret, what could I do? I raised my hands. And they had to turn away and start all over. It'd be interesting to know what happened to that couple 50 years later. Did I ever teach any of their children? Each one went their own way.
But Rabbi Zvi Hoffman did find
the
way.
He didn't find the way. There's a question, count your losses.
That's right.
Not when there's an Issei D'Oraita L'Chatchila. But here, they weren't going to separate. And there was a case where the lady threatened to commit suicide.
To
become Christian again. So they did what they could in the sense, don't make Chuppah Kedushin. The Rambam, there's not a Nisa of Malkut involved. It's not so severe. It's not a happy solution. Rabbi Schoenfeld had the same problem with, I told you, the case where the mother-in-law died. And the daughter-in-law could now live with her husband. He didn't let his mother-in-law intervene in the marriage, and he was calling two kids a kohanim and two kids a halalim. I taught three out of the four children. Two kohanim, two halalim. The case came up in Riverdale where they were divorced and the 16-year-old daughter was killed by a car. And at the funeral, they fell on top of each other. And at the end of they started living together again within days. If you follow me, these are terrible situations. But it's not a question you're matir. It's like we're dealing with the whole question of homosexuals and lesbians and heterosexuals and whatnot. What do you do? No, we have to accept them for what they are. On the other hand, what they're doing is absolutely not normative and not halachically acceptable. You follow me? It's a certain line we're walking, a very difficult line. All right, and then we ended off with the question, we'll deal with it next week, and next week we're going to deal with another very fascinating question, an answering machine on Shabbos. And you'll see how he deals with that, and the whole question, if you have a business and they're taking, and you have an answering machine, and orders come in on Shabbos, what are you allowed to do? What are you not allowed to do? Also, a very fascinating question. Tomorrow, Be'ezrat Hashem, I pick up exactly where I left off, and I continue with Rabbi Rachman and the fallout. And I want to make clear, it's not anything disrespectful, meaning this was Rabbi Rachman's point of view. He became more strident after the Rav criticized him in public, and I don't think Jill Kirk is right. It's not that the Rav didn't mention his name. The Rav didn't have to mention his name. hundreds of rabbis were there, and everyone knew what the Rav was talking about. It was the topic of discussion. The convention had just ended, RCA. But after that, as you saw last week, Rabbi Rackman became more strident, and he realized he'll never become president of YU. He went on to Bar Ilan, and in Bar Ilan there's a big center for women, and you'll see the fallout from that. I have something for Yitzchak that has kept me awake many nightmares subsequently. But we'll leave that for tomorrow. First of all, this is a printout of the talk that Rabbi Usher Weiss gave on Dalet Kosot. He deals with Chama Medina here, but there's not one word of what is on the recording. He evidently ad-libbed when he spoke about there's no Chama Medina today. But this is the essential shiur. Give one to Herbie for his grandson. This is for Yitzchak. Baruch atah Adonai Melech Olam Shehakol Yehi Bechiro. I have to tell you, Alan Dershowitz is now representing the President of the United States. Alan Dershowitz argues new standards for presidential power. And he got up and said that a president can do anything to be reelected. There's nothing wrong. The lead House manager, Representative Adam B. Schiff, called the theory very odd. When I heard what Alan Dershowitz said, I said, this is the result of BTA. He learned a little Gemara. They're lucky that he didn't quote, Hamore b'malchut chayav mitah. This is very fascinating. Normie Gold sent this to me. It's by a Palestinian, a Christian Arab. Peace to prosperity, a vision to improve the lives of the Palestinian Israeli people. The Palestinians should forget Trump and read the plan. Very, very balanced article. Yitzchak sent this to me, halachic status of surrogate. And this is the problem we raised in class. Yomo, where are you going? I'll meet you downstairs. This is the problem. Imagine this is a new problem. Imagine they take a uterus of a dead woman, put it into a live woman, and they fertilize the egg, and it's grown with that uterus. Who is the mother? So I told you, it's a machlokes poskim. My humble mind seems to understand that the owner of the egg is the mother, but others disagree with me. Yeah, it's a very interesting article. Alan Dershowitz, why I'm defending Trump. This is a very important breakthrough that no one even talks about. An end to kidney dialysis. Research is being done here, and they may have a breakthrough to reverse the kidney problem. It's now being, this was published now in a journal. They're experimenting on mice. It's away from production, but Israel may once again save the world. And I would establish that no one should have access to this unless the country in which they live has their embassy in Yerushalayim, Yer HaKodesh. Call me a right-winger, I consider it a compliment.
What are the frowdies going to do for a living?
Halavai, that they can sit and learn Torah, then we'll get them, we'll get a stipend and run a kollel for them. Kol HaKavod to the White House, there was an event with President Trump, and the event was citing American Nonprofit Organization of Terrorism and Act, and big ceremony, and a number of people invited with Shomer Shabbos. They rescheduled it earlier, so that the Shomrei Shabbos could get home before Shabbos. I'll tell you, it's beyond words what has happened, and we'll talk about that, at least one aspect, in a minute. Afraid of coronavirus, fewer people went shul. You don't imagine the fallout from the virus. These are Chabad Shluchim in China. Look what they look like with their masks. And generally they have 70, 80 people, and the Shabbat before last they were down to 15. Who knows if anyone was there Shabbat. This is a beautiful article. Elie Wiesel's only son learns daf yomi, and aspires like his father to be a good Jew. And this is real good news, because this is a kid who went to Ramaz and rebelled. You know, when you have a father like that, you need muzzled. And take a look today, beautiful interview with him. Orthodox Jews run soup kitchen, bringing together Jewish and black leaders. This is Masiba. This is in Borough Park, a kitchen network, Brooklyn, largely Orthodox Brooklyn, neighborhood of Borough Park. And here you see half Hasidim, half Afro-Americans, and everyone benefiting. This was very moving. Kate Middleton, who we hear all this news about, and whom the Rebbe, yours truly, attacked in class for forgetting the blood in her husband's veins, she is very sensitive to the whole story of what we have gone through, and these are portraits she did of Holocaust survivors. Very, very nice. And Achron, I have one book to give out, this a pamphlet. This is Boca Raton Synagogue, their adult education program, my student Rabbi Ephraim Goldberg. I think between Rabbi Goldberg, and if you ever see what they put out in your Israel Century City, this is a lesson for rabbis, what one can accomplish. Unbelievable what's going on in Boca. Achron, Achron, Chaviv, Bibi's opponent borrows tefillin in airport. And take a look who's davening with tefillin, but there's one little problem here. Here is, no, tell me who it is, Gans. Raised in a Satma home, he should know to turn around the tsruat, what do they call it? The straps.
How come no towel? How come he doesn't have a towel?
He borrowed the tefillin.
He forgot this.
Okay. So first of all, let me formally end the class. We should meet again in health and happiness. Das Vedanya. Now, the young lady, you ready to record me? Okay, come sit here, record. I'll say a few words. And whoever, do you mind if it goes on YU Torah, or you want it just for the shoe?
Yeah, I think it's just for the shoe.
No. Why do you say just?
I don't want my father to see it.
you don't want it on YU Torah?
No.
You don't? So then we'll turn off these tapes. 1 second. But turn on your tape. Jack, you record.